Welcome to Jurisdiction, the International Intellectual Property Law podcast for December 2010. I'm your host, Don Cameron, of Cameron McKendrick LLP in Toronto, Canada. We hope you'll find this podcast informative, but it should not be taken as legal advice. The opinions expressed are solely those of the participants. This month on Jurisdiction, we deal with, of all things, jurisdiction, at least the jurisdiction one European country's court has over patent infringement in another European country. A few years ago, there was much talk about Dutch cross-border injunctions for patent infringement in other European countries and preemptive Italian torpedoes to frustrate them. Forum shopping became a key strategy for patent litigation in Europe. Then the Dutch injunctions and their counterparts seemed to go away. Dr. Paul England is a lawyer at the Simmons & Simmons firm in London, England. He's recently written on the subject of cross-border injunctions and a reference in the Solvay case, which may result in the return of these injunctions. I spoke with Paul from his office in London, England. Hello, Paul.
Hello, John.
Paul, first there were cross-border injunctions granted in Europe, then they seemed to go away. Now they seem to be coming back. Could you sort of give us the big picture view of the nature of these cross-border injunctions?
Yes, well, there are two things to bear in mind here. First of all, the European patent system itself. And there is no such thing as a pan-European patent that covers all countries umbrella fashion and simultaneously. Instead, whilst it's possible to apply for a European patent through the European Patent Office, on grant, that patent splits up into what we call a bundle of rights. One patent per nation for all of the countries that were designated in that original application. So they are national rights as opposed to pan-European rights. That's the first thing. The second thing is that European law coming from the European Union has developed legislation to deal with the fact that cases can happen in various European jurisdictions, and it's developed rules in the regulation to try to make that a smoother process litigating those kinds of matters. And it's the interplay between that patent system of national rights and the European legislation that creates the difficulties on cross-border injunctions. So that's the sort of background for you, Don. Specifically, those European rules say that, in general, a European defendant should be sued in the country of domicile. That's the general rule. The other rule is that if there are a number of defendants, the defendants can all be sued in the courts of one of those defendants, the country of domicile of one of those defendants. So some courts in some countries of the European Union have taken this to mean they can issue or can deal with applications against one defendant where there's infringing activity happening in other jurisdictions, either by that defendant or possibly by defendants acting in those other jurisdictions. This kind of European-wide reach suddenly evolves. In the 90s, in the 1990s in particular, a system of case law had developed in Germany and Holland in particular. The German courts were saying or issuing injunctions against defendants domiciled in Germany for infringing activity that they had executed or performed in other European countries. The Dutch, on the other hand, were using this rule about the one of the defendants' countries of domicile, to issue injunctions out of Holland against defendants based in other countries who were infringing patents in other countries. And they're the two sort of basic setups. And that was until two cases called GATT and Look, or GAT and Look, and Roche and Primus came along.
Paul, you mentioned
one rule already, or one of the articles of the EC regulations that has to do with, I think it's Article 6.1 that says that were there many parties sued in one country, you can include a defendant in that lawsuit so long as at least one defendant is domiciled in that country. But there's the other article, another article there that also plays into this, dealing with validity. What article is that, and what does it cover?
Yes, that's right. That's the present Article 22, subsection 4 of the EC regulation, the Brussels regulation. And that says that validity matters. And despite these other rules, it says that validity is to be determined exclusively in the country in which the patent was issued. And that, as it turned out, had an effect on cross-border jurisdiction.
I understand a few years ago there were a couple of cases that became highly important in this area. Could you discuss those?
Yes, yeah, so there are two cases predominantly that came out of the European Court of Justice, which is now called the European Union Court of Justice. The first was called GAT and Look, and the second was Roche and Primus. And they were both issued on the same day, as it happened, in July 2006. The first of those, the GAT case, was a reference that was made by the German courts to the European Court of Justice. And that case concerned a German defendant who had been undertaking infringing activity in France, or alleged to, against a French patent. Now, the German court actually thought that it could issue an injunction against that activity. But the ECJ ruled that because validity had been raised as a defense, that the patent essentially could not be infringed because it was invalid. Because validity was raised, the court clarified this Article 22.4 section of the regulation by saying that as soon as any issue of validity is raised, whether it's the validity issue is there from the beginning, or whether it's by counterclaim, or however else introduced, as soon as validity comes in issue, the German court in that case would have to decline jurisdiction and transfer the case to the courts of the country in which the allegedly infringed patent is registered, in this case, France. Now, the second case, Roche and Primus, that came from the ECJ, had been referred by the Dutch courts. And in this case, the allegations of infringement were about subsidiaries, one of which was based in Holland, the others which were based in other countries, infringing the patents of the countries in which they were all based. Now, in that case, and it is important to remember that on the facts, each defendant was only infringing the patents of the country in which it was based and not other countries. In that case, the ECJ said that it was also the law that infringement cases must also be heard in the countries of the court in which the infringement is alleged. So the Dutch courts were rebuffed. And the result of these two cases has been that when dealing with patent litigation, be it infringement, seeking an injunction in a hearing on the merits, final injunction, or dealing with validity issues, it seems that cases have to be fought on a nation-by-nation basis. And this more or less killed off, some would argue otherwise, but in practical sense, it's kind of killed off the old spider, so-called spider in the web method of getting injunctions against a central infringer who has companies related to it domiciled in other countries who are also infringing in those countries. It couldn't be done centrally anymore. And it also had a knock-on effect to something called the torpedo.
Now, what was the torpedo strategy? I understand there's even an Italian torpedo.
Yes, the torpedo strategy was something that I believe started in the courts of Belgium and went on to Italy, of exploiting these rules, and in particular exploiting the Liz Pendens rule, that once one country is seized of jurisdiction in the European Union, all other countries have to stay their actions. So what was happening is that potential infringers who felt an action may be launched against them in a fast jurisdiction, procedurally fast jurisdiction, were seeking declarations of non-infringement in countries that they perceived to be to have slow systems, which were at the time Italy and Belgium. What this caused really stopped proceedings because in, for example, Italy, the Italian courts would not resolve their own competency to hear a case, their own jurisdiction, until the trial on the merits. And that could come some years after the facts at issue, the potential infringement arises. So other courts would be forced, at least in theory, to stay pending a decision from Italy or Belgium, potentially years, and therefore frustrating activity against the people who had applied for the torpedo, so-called torpedo.
So did the Roche and Primus case also kill the Italian and Belgian torpedoes as well or not?
Yes, I think in theory, but because it, again, the idea of the torpedo was that the non-infringement was akin to an infringement action. And so Roche and Primus essentially seems to say that an infringement has to be dealt with on a national basis, and that would seem to apply to declarations of non-infringement too. But I think on a more practical level, one of the difficulties for the torpedo actions is that actually, perhaps with the exception of Germany, most countries really were not, in many, most cases, not prepared to stay. The courts of countries were not prepared to stay proceedings because of these, particularly in the UK, for example. Proceedings, a court would entertain proceedings if it felt that the Italian torpedo or Belgian torpedo was an abusive process. Although in a recent research in motion case, the Court of Appeal in England actually hinted temptingly that that might not be the case, and that in fact litigants were intended to or were entitled to use the rules as they found them, and that that may not actually be abusive, but that wasn't the central issue in that case.
Now, I understand that in a paper that you wrote recently that's on your website, and we'll put a link to it in the podcast, you made reference to a reference that's coming up to the European Union Court of Justice. I wonder if you could explain what that's about.
Yes, this is a Solvay case. This is interesting because there are two, I mean, some people would say there are a number of questions still left after the GAT case and the Roche case. Two in particular are whether the rules apply to preliminary or interim injunctions, which are expressly excluded from Brussels regulation, and exactly what scenarios they would apply to. Now, the interesting thing about this Solvay case, it's rather subtle, the difference between Solvay on the facts and Primus. You remember I said that Primus involved infringements by defendants in their own countries against the patents in the countries in which they were domiciled. In Primus, which is another, in Solvay, I beg your pardon, which is another reference from the Dutch courts, the infringements by the various defendants are taking place in more than one jurisdiction and overlapping with each other. And so what has been argued is that there is a risk under Article 6.1 of inconsistent decisions. And therefore, the Dutch courts ought to be able to issue a cross-border injunction against all of these defendants so that individual cases are not heard in each of the countries where the infringements are happening, because they risk being inconsistent. And the reason that inconsistency is an issue here and not in the earlier Primus case is that we are talking about infringements by the same parties using the same acts under the same facts in different countries, which was previously argued not to be the case. So it will be interesting to see what happens there. Another issue is indeed whether, because this is a reference about preliminary injunctions, whether the court and what the court will say about its competency to rule on preliminary injunctions, and indeed whether preliminary injunctions can be issued in a kind of spider in the web scenario, as we saw in the old days.
Before we started the call today, you referred to the fact that there's some new regulations that have been introduced quite recently.
Yes, that's right, Don. On the 14th of December, the European Commission made a proposal for changes, reforms to the Brussels regulation. Now, most of these are probably not relevant to the sort of situations we've been talking about. But one is in particular, and I think it probably, if the Italian torpedo was not dead and buried already, I think these reforms, if they are taken up and enacted in their current form, probably will see the end of the Italian torpedo. And that is simply the requirement that any country that is seized of jurisdiction first, so perhaps it could be one of the new territories of the European Union, which has a perceived to have a slow procedural system, that has to declare within 6 months whether it has competency. If it doesn't, then the case will have to be transferred elsewhere. So obviously that limits any torpedo, in inverted commas, to 6 months and rather undermines the purpose of these torpedoes, which is to slow things down for years. But it will be some time until we know what the results of that consultation are.
And depending what happens on the Solvay reference, it may do a runaround around that rule to allow for...
Yes, I mean, the Solvay reference is not clear when that will when that will be decided upon. These things can take a couple of years. So it may be that any new legislation on Brussels, any reforms to Brussels, actually come out roughly at the same time as the Solvay case. And it may be indeed that Solvay has to refer to the new regulations. So it is there's some uncertainty there, certainly, about what the European Court of Justice will say on Solvay. And it will be an interesting one to watch.
We'll keep an eye on it. Thank you very much for these insights, Paul.
You're very welcome, Don. It's really good to talk to you.
Paul England is a lawyer at Simmons & Simmons in London, England. For further information regarding Paul's discussion of the potential repercussions of the Solvay case, and for information on other jurisdiction podcasts, please visit iplawpodcast.com. You have been listening to Jurisdiction, the International Intellectual Property Law Podcast. I'm Don Cameron of Cameron McKendrick in Toronto, Canada. Thank you for listening.